So my name's Sophie. I'm facilitating this event, and I'm going to do two things, and then we're going to go into the fishbowl. So the first thing I'm going to explain is what this funny shape is, for those of you that haven't done a fishbowl before, the kind of the rules, if you like, you know, the structure that we're going to be using. And then we're going to do just a short little internal few questions just to connect with that issue of leadership. So just to really put us in touch with some of the questions that we might have, that we might be bringing. And then we're going to go into the fishbowl. So we're just going to do one shared inquiry, which is the fishbowl itself. Okay, just let me get a sense. How many people have never done a fishbowl before? So who is this completely new to? Okay, so about half, maybe a bit more than half. That's great. So the rules of engagement, if you like, go like this. The purpose of the fishbowl is to have a shared inquiry. So rather than taking a topic and having a debate where things go to and fro and you maybe argue with somebody and it all can get quite separated out, the idea of a fishbowl is that we make a circle together and together we deepen into the question that's brought us all here. So you'll see if it's working that we'll start somewhere and gradually we'll kind of go deeper and deeper. And the intention is that by the end of it, we've all found out things that we didn't know before. That we're going to really call in the group wisdom to go to places that are new for all of us. So some of it will be familiar to you, you know, and at some point, hopefully, there'll be something that's new to you as well, even if you've been with this topic for a long time. The structure goes like this. In this inner circle, this is where the conversation is going to happen. So these are the active chairs. This is where people actually come in and speak. But the intention is to have a flow between the outer circle and the inner circle. So some people may be speaking in the middle. The idea is to keep one chair free at any time. So if someone else feels the urge to join in or feels like they've got something that they need to say, they can come and take an empty chair. And if you're in the middle, you don't just come in, say what you've got to say and come out again, because it's a bit nervous in there. Come in, join in the discussion, but when you feel like that kind of peace that was calling you in is completed and has flowed and you're really done, then you just move back out again. So it's a nice structure for having a contained, focused conversation, but also to include quite a large group of people. It may be that you don't come into the centre at all, and that's absolutely fine. And the role of the people that are listening is really important in a fishbowl. So your job, if you're listening, is to see how much you can inhabit that space where you're non-judgmental. You know, if you can be more in your heart or in your body, just witnessing what's being said, rather than kind of your mind going, oh, I agree with that. No, I don't agree with that. Yeah, but I think, listen. So if you can hold quite an expansive kind of welcoming space just to witness what's happening, that's part of what I think helps the inquiry to deepen. When do you come into the middle? So for me, I usually, my heart starts beating, and it may be that your heart starts beating or you get some kind of pull to move into the middle, and you may not even know what it is that you're going to say when you get there. But if your body or, you know, there's some urge to do that, I would just trust that. And if you come in and you still can't find what it is, it's fine to just move out again. But it may be that once you get in there, there's something that wants to be spoken. And it may be something that you're really, really surprised to hear coming out of your mouth that you didn't know that you think. And another whole part of me is going, I completely disagree with it. So sometimes when we sit together in a group, it's like the shared field, the shared wisdom gets all the bits expressed, even if it's not particularly personal to you. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, you know, be open to be a little bit surprised by what you hear and also what you say. So we've got the flow for coming in and for coming out. What have I missed, people that have done fishbowls before? What else do we need to do?
If you feel somebody's hogging the space.
Thank you, yeah. If you're really feeling a pull to come in and the five chairs are occupied and you think somebody's been sat in there quite a long time, We can give a gentle reminder to somebody that's maybe got so engrossed in the conversation that they're finding it hard to leave by going and standing behind them. And if they're still finding it really hard, you might even tap them on the shoulder. So I've done a number of fishbowls in public events, and I've actually never seen that happen because people were really mindful of making the space. Actually, the tendency was the other way, that people would go in and out a bit too quickly, and then you don't get a sense of a really held conversation. But it may be that this is so engrossing that we need to be reminded to just keep the flow going of being in the inner and outer circles. Thank you.
What are the rules about speaking when you're in there? Thank you.
So when you're in here, the idea is really that this is the container for our conversation. So you might be referring to something that somebody else said, or even you're kind of speaking back to somebody, but try not to sort of turn around and go, oh yes, and when you said that. So you might say, when that other person who was here earlier said this, this is what came up for me. But try to just be speaking to the people that are in the middle. Is that what you meant? Is there another?
Also, wait until someone finishes before you start speaking.
Thank you. See, I'm not listening very well. So something about respectful listening, waiting for people to speak. And it may be that there's silence in the middle. And if you're in the middle, you're not responsible for entertaining everybody. So sometimes what you're doing is holding a really good job of having silence there so we can all take a breath and pause, and then the next thing will come. Yeah, so I invite you to really be mindful of all of these things, silence, space, speaking, moving. Any questions? Yeah.
It looks like it's being recorded.
Thank you.
Is it going on the internet?
It's likely to end up on the internet. Do you know where it's going to go?
No. It's just if someone doesn't want it broadcasted to the whole world.
Yeah. Does anyone feel uncomfortable with being a part of this? You may not know what's going to come out of your mouth, so you may not be able to say that at this point. Does anyone at the moment feel uncomfortable with it being recorded and put up on the internet?
I don't feel uncomfortable, but I always take part of a process like this as being confidentiality and what's held within the circle. Mm-hmm. This circle. That's kind of how I've always approached it. At the moment, I don't feel uncomfortable, but it does seem a bit odd. I'm just naming it.
Okay, thank you.
Could we have a rule that if you don't want what you said broadcasted, you could take it out?
I think that's going to be a real headache for the people that are doing the...
Could I just respond to that? I don't feel like this is a closed group anyway. So anything that you're not comfortable stating or disclosing in public, you probably shouldn't say here anyway. Let's save that for the one-to-one conversations, maybe.
Yeah.
Doesn't it sort of change the sensitive space, the trust, the way you're talking? It seems that it's it's an unpredictable process. You don't know what you're going to say. Mm. And if you feel that, suddenly what you said unexpectedly is now broadcast, seems not to make sense for me for this particular exercise.
Yeah, thank you. Some measurements for that.
It sounds like we've started. just to say the other, which is both and what you're saying, that the reason why we're recording it is so that the people that aren't here, who haven't been able to get to the conference, can hear something of this discussion. So just to name, that's the intention. And another offering would be that we carry on, we record it, and if there is something that happens that somebody doesn't want, then we don't have the recording.
Yeah.
That we wipe the recording out. Mm-hmm. Would be one way.
So we check at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. How would that be? I think that's a good way to go. Could somebody hold to remind me to do that? That we check at the end. Is that enough?
Is it just the idea behind it? Would it just be live to everybody? Would it actually just be live to the Foundation Network members?
It's that there's no closed membership. If it's open to everybody. Let's check in at the end.
Just to check, we're not necessarily saying names, are we? It's up to you.
No,
so
we're not.
No.
Yeah. So it's only if your voice is recognisable that you can be recognised. So yeah, it's not like filming it. You're not filming. Any other questions about the process? Okay. Mostly I'm not going to be in the middle, so mostly once we're set up, unless there's some kind of process comment that I need to make just to clear up something that I've missed, I'll be holding the space, just sitting in a seat. I will come in and say when we've only got about 5 minutes to go, and if there's something at that point, particularly from people that haven't come into the middle and spoken already, that'll be your last chance, obviously. So at that point, it's nice if we can make space for people that haven't spoken previously. And I'm hoping that we'll have just a few minutes at the end just to reflect on the process itself. So, you know, there's the fishbowl and then just something, especially to hear from people that haven't gone in, so that we get a complete picture of what happened in the inquiry. Does that make sense? So we'll do that in the last few minutes before we close.
How long do you want the fishbowl to run?
So we're due to finish at about 6. So we'll have about 50 minutes. You know, 50 minutes to an hour. It's coming up to 5 now. Okay. So last point. The conversation starts when two people are in the middle. You may need to close this just for the sound. So as soon as two people are in the middle, you just start having a conversation and see who gets pulled in. Okay. So just as a way of tuning in, the topic for this is around leadership and power. So you might just want to close your eyes and just sort of tune into those questions in yourself. And I've got a few suggestions of things you might want to just reflect on. So we really bring that topic kind of to the surface in all the world of information and ideas that we're in. So one thing you might want to think about is when you are in a group of people that was working really well. What was it about that group that you did that felt like such a good experience? So just think of an example. Just have a think about how the qualities of leadership worked in that. What was it that group achieved? It might be that you did things. It might be that you built really deep relationship and trust. Maybe you had a lot of fun together. What were the qualities of leadership? How do people bring leadership into that group? And just notice when you think about that, if there were things that you did that you wouldn't have been able to do without that group being there. So where did you go into new territory as a result of that group, and how did that happen? Qualities of leadership now. And then we just might spend a moment also reflecting in another direction, if you let go of that, thinking about where leadership hasn't worked. Maybe in a group that was difficult, or where you felt frustrated by what was happening, felt blocked, or the group couldn't achieve its purpose. What was happening with the leadership or the power or the relationships and the dynamics in that group? What would you like to have happened? What would have been better for you in that situation? What might someone else have done? Maybe what might you have done differently? just the last place of reflection is just to bring this question back to yourself. And just see if you think of yourself as a leader, as someone with power or with influence in a group, with other people in different situations. In what ways might you do that? In what ways do you help other people to find something new for themselves? Or to do something they wouldn't do without you present? Or whatever else it is that you think a leader does. Just how does it feel to think of yourself as a leader in that way? And maybe there's a big mixture of feelings or responses in you about that. And just bring yourself back, opening your eyes again, just seeing who's here. And as you feel ready, we'll start the fishbowl process. So just see if you feel drawn to come into the centre. And when there's two, then the conversation begins.
And then, just draw me here, is I feel often with the people I work with on a transition initiative that leadership is a dirty word. I think that's wrong. So, I would like to find it as something I'm quite passionate about, and I believe, you know, that there needs to be a clearer understanding of leadership, really, because I think it's pretty essential. That's my view, and I think there's leadership. And I know everyone who's here at this conference or who's moved to join the transition town or movement or something, but for some reason I think it has many connotations of hierarchy and of control and all these sorts of things that everyone has, that many people have issues with, and yeah, I'm looking for ways to get through that really with some people I work with, I think. Yeah.
I'm Gail, I'm from Transition City Lancaster, and I would also agree with the things that you said. Because I always have been difficulties and have been born.
Could you speak up?
Because I've been questioning it myself, it led me to embark on this kind of leadership for sustainability LA. And I realise that what I'm looking at is different models of leadership, you know, that aren't hierarchical. And it's led me to kind of question my own behaviour by doing action research, inquiries with others. Made me realise that some of the things that I do are actually leadership. And one of the things, like the things that Sophie was saying before, there are examples within our transition group in Lancaster where things have worked. And for me, I see a lot of the leadership that goes on is different people doing things. And it's a bit like a flock of birds. Somebody might be leading at one point, and then when somebody gets a bit tired, or something happens in their life, it's absolutely fantastic on several occasions, I feel, when it's really working, is that other people come to the front. And on one occasion I got the film programme going, and I was doing some work away, and what was absolutely brilliant was the support and other people exercising leadership by producing a flyer with the films and the kind of information about them. Other people making sure that if I couldn't get back on the train, the event was covered. So other people were also doing things. So I felt, in our transition group, there are lots of people leading on different initiatives. And I don't think leadership's a dirty word, and it has to be hierarchical.
And I almost find in my transition group that it's harder not to be a leader, in that I kind of lead one of our projects, and I work very hard to say, no, it's not my project. It's not that I own it. It's our project, and I want everyone to be involved. But everyone keeps turning around and saying, your project that you... No, not my project. And I've been fighting this battle for about a year now, of really trying to get other people involved. And actually, I feel the only kind of turning point was when I said to them, right, I'm going travelling for the next 2 months, which I am, around Europe. I'm not going to be here anymore. You need to take this on as a group. How can we kind of divide this up? How can we each take responsibility for different parts of it? That suddenly they kind of jumped up and said, oh, okay, well, I can take on that. Because they saw that kind of vacuum then, that I was physically not present, that they needed to kind of fill and they needed to rise up to that. But to take your point, I think about it's leadership, yeah, maybe implies hierarchy or power. But I think one thing we all need to kind of become aware of is how we don't necessarily have power over others, but we have influence. We all have social influence. Everybody is watching us and what we do and our actions. And when we jump on a plane, that normalizes that behavior. Or if we put solar panels on our house, that normalizes that behavior. People look at us as a source of inspiration. So we can't not be leaders. And we can't say, I'm not a leader. We can't, because that's just the way it works. And we're social animals.
I have a similar question. What I'm thinking about, how do we develop the leadership from the point where we are, me, myself, the group, to somewhere where we want to be? And how do we make the decision and involve people and go further, even if we have a decision that I'm outside? How do we act if you're strong and you're strong and I'm the leader? How do we cope with these tricky things? And I think it's essential for us to talk about, because I agree with you, we are all leaders and somebody is leading the group or project or whatever, and decisions are to be taken, otherwise we can't go forward.
Yeah.
So, but we step into the old model quite easy and act as teenagers sometimes, and we are not aware of it ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
So sometimes I think we need somebody from the outside to come and help us to facilitate our work. Because it's so essential now I'm from Sweden, and as we have been doing a lot of work from the last year, and now these things are going to happen, we need to make perhaps some hard decisions and so on. We need to develop the leadership, of course, and transform it to other groups too. So it's for us it's very important.
But also, I think, as you say, I think a good facilitator can help to address any imbalances. I think you were talking sort of about forcefulness in some ways. And I must admit, when I get passionate about something, I can come across as a bit forceful. And I can actually kind of steamroll over kind of quieter people in a group. And fortunately, I've become more aware of that and kind of actively try to restrain myself. But yeah, it's really important as well to, if you see that happening in a group, I think, to try and even up the, not so much the power, but if one person is very forceful and one person is very kind of restrained, then a facilitator can kind of make the forceful person realise how they're steamrolling over the other person, and make the quieter person kind of maybe speak up and actually, so you actually do get the whole wisdom of the group and you do get the consensus of the group, because like you say, without that you don't go forward, or you don't go forward in the right direction really.
I really enjoy teenage clumsy leadership. I think it's brilliant, and I think there should be more of that in us adults as well. You know, and you make a few gaffes and whatever. It's a brilliant age to work with. I think sort of 16 to 21, where you're really getting your self confidence. It's not quite attached to anything yet.
It's young enough, like an
missile without the guiding device properly attached. And it's fantastic. And I think you see some of the best examples of real, genuine, authentic, heartfelt leadership in that age group. It's brilliant. That's what I love. And you know, finding that leadership in the youngster, that's what I'm really keen at as well. Because I think that's fundamental for the changes we're going through. Is finding strong leadership there. It's people kind of dismiss that age group, but it's a whole generation of followers. consumers, if you like, but it's looking for leadership in there that really excites me. So.
Maybe that's one of the ways to kind of, as you were saying, we find it very easy to step into that normal kind of hierarchical power structure. And maybe it's one of the ways to turn that around and to maybe engage a younger group is to maybe put the younger members of the group in positions of leadership that are usually taken by older people. It maybe it kind of shakes up people's thinking about that, I don't know, as an idea.
I think that it's important to try and review at some point the leadership that you've been taking. And I think an interesting thing is actually working with others and things like action research inquiries where you're actually working with others on a cooperative inquiry. Because one of the things that you were saying is, you know, the idea of having a facilitator, often you haven't got the facilitator there. Mm. So perhaps by working with others on a cooperative inquiry, you can maybe then review and get the wisdom of others in that way.
I mean,
and
I
also
think
question them whether you think, you know, somebody a couple of weeks ago, an event I was doing, rang up and apologised the next day for actually felt she'd taken too much space. Whereas I thought she made such valid contributions so sensitively, it wasn't my perception. But I think if you're doing something in an inquiry with others, or if you feel you've exercised leadership and you're not quite sure if you didn't do it very well, then I think it's good to actually get feedback rather than just kind of soldier.
Yeah,
definitely. So you get a sense of how you're perceived.
Because I guess we can all be facilitators. That's what I was trying to say, is that you don't have to be an expert like some people in this room who have loads of experience in facilitating. You can just realise, oh, this person is very loud, this person's very quiet, we need to do something. And if you're reflecting on your own behaviour, ideally, or the behaviour of others, you can kind of help it work better.
I think perhaps if, you know, because in transition we do a lot of things in groups, and I think if the process is within the group that there's a review and a reflection, that can be quite useful in your own growth and development as a leader.
I want to share with you a bit of my personal story on my transition initiative group. I was one of the founders and I put much of the energy in the beginning. And I think I fell into some kind of superhero syndrome or something, by which I couldn't stop organizing things or stop, I couldn't stop. And I'm starting to see lots of reflects of that
in my
personal life.
Yeah, did you find that your group kind of reinforced that superhero syndrome?
Yes, my group and the public in general. Like, I got clapped, I got, applauded, and I was like, what the hell is this? Okay, never experienced this. And I think that I'm kind of in a trap, and I would like some people to come up with some help for me to delegate some responsibilities and some tasks. Please.
Leave.
Leave?
That's what I'm doing. For 2 months.
I would like to bring in something from a former training that I just came back to my mind. It's in my book. It's about rank, because leadership and rank is linked together. And in groups, sometimes if you feel that you have the highest rank in what's going about, you should take over the leadership role, even if it's just for a few minutes. There's a social rank. Sometimes the person who has the best know-how or most of the money to take over the responsibility. There's also a psychological rank of your self-awareness, that you see now I'm the person who is most self-aware, I should take over now, the leadership role. Political rank, also spiritual rank, we talk about how comfortable you are with your inner reality. And local rank, are you from here, do you know what's going on here? The position in the structure. And this is what was pretty instructive for me to see, oh, now in this group, even if I have no know-how at all, I have the highest rank. I didn't recognize that. So I'll step in for a few minutes, hours, or days, or weeks, and then I'm also allowed to jump out again.
Yeah. And it seems to be a way that good conversations happen, is when people are jumping into a position of leadership and then, as you say, letting others take it, and it flows around. I guess it only becomes a problem when one person dominates, as you say, as you become the superhero and everyone kind of encourages you to take all of the power and to hold all of it and, you know, for a long time, and not maybe kind of stifle others who potentially could lead or might be better to lead than you. Do you think that's...
Yeah, or you have a moment in your group when you really try to find out whose rank is in what area, so to acknowledge that and to know, okay, now might be the chance for you to drop in because it's too much for me.
I'm not suggesting that anybody's stifling someone, but I'm curious to know that in terms of gender, why I'm the only woman who's actually stepped into this mission role, and where, you know, there seems to be even mix in the room. So I'm thinking, well, is this saying anything about leadership?
I was holding back. A part of me wanted to tell my story, and I'll do it as briefly as I can, which is that I've never experienced myself as a leader before I came into transition. And for some time I didn't. I was just a part of mainly the food group. And it happened that I had an idea that I was passionate about, which was that it's all very well that we grow food and we encourage people to grow food, but what about the food we waste? And I had an idea to run an event which I called Making the Most of Food. And I did that with a little help, mainly from one person. And it was a limited success, and I was exhausted because I did it practically on my own. And so my first experience of leadership was not about in any way taking from anyone else or dominating anyone else. It was about, this is an idea I'm passionate about and I will make it happen. And then I was exhausted. And then subsequently there was some funding came, and my thought was to do this again, but this time not to exhaust myself. And my idea was then to create a group, which we did. We invited members of other local related groups with similar interests. And I think about 8 of us met, and we discussed how we could use this funding, and we discussed what we call ourselves, which was Cambridge Sustainable Food Alliance. And we ran an event, and it was a much bigger success. And then we discussed where we would go next, and we had an idea for another event, and I was beginning to feel anxious that I would exhaust myself again. And then my mother became ill, and I went to be with her while she was dying. And other people just picked it up and ran with it and made it happen. And now those people are very proactive, and we are creating a presentation to take to other places and other groups, and they're coming back to me and saying, what do you think about this? And I'm going, that's fine, let's just carry on. So my first experience of leadership has been very powerful, and I think that this is one of the things that transition offers. It is an opportunity for us to grow. Thank you.
One of the things that we do where we are is... that if somebody's running with a project, if somebody takes something on, that they make sure there's always at least one or two other people to do it with them, so that if that person does burn out or that person suddenly goes away, then the project will continue. And I think that's quite important in terms of what you just said. But one of the other things, thinking back to what was said before, the lady who was sitting in my chair, was about the power balance, the gender power balance. In the town, the city where I live, curiously, by complete coincidence, I think, virtually all of the transition groups are sort of run and dominated by strong-willed women, which is interesting. It's not something you find everywhere. And recently there's been an interesting case where I quite like a bit of feedback, actually, from perhaps others who have been through a similar thing. It would be quite useful. About power domination and about egos coming into it and about this is my group, no, this is my group, and all this kind of, you know, whose group is it? Actually, it's not anybody's, it's our group, it belongs to the whole community. But there's been a case of this kind of, you know, people wanting to take ownership of the group, which not everybody's happy with, of course. So I'd be interested to find out, you know, if anybody's had other similar experiences and how they dealt with that.
Leading on from what you were saying about people taking ownership and wanting to claim, in a way, their own piece of land of the group and say, this is what I do. We've had that within our transition movement, where an idea was a fantastic idea, but it suddenly became that one person's realm. And it was very hard, literally, to try and say, wait a second, it was a wonderful idea which all of us have had and shared with over the years, and you've literally come along and sort of taken that idea which we all shared in, and now called it your own, as if you're the one who came up with it. And we're not quite happy kind of with that, and we would like you first of all, we had to acknowledge the person's skills, because they had fantastic skills in what we were trying to do, and then we asked them to realise that they are taking on a lot, and in fact spreading themselves so thinly that they were then struggling to complete what they said they were going to do. And we allowed that person time. It took 3, 4, nearly 5 months. And that person came back and said, I need help for this now. I can't do it on my own. My job role's changed. My personal life's changed. Things have improved. Because rather than saying, come straight back, we applauded the person for their abilities. We helped them get better and appreciate themselves. Their self-esteem grew. Even though their ego was the thing taking over, we in the end managed to get them to reflect on their own behaviour and realise that what they were doing was dominating it, holding on to it, and actually you're about to destroy it because it would never be sustainable on his own. And we found that he actually came to self-realisation that he needed help, and we're now getting to that position where there's more of us who are getting involved. There's now a leadership group for that idea, and it's just more free-flowing. So sometimes patience works, but sometimes a less than subtle word in the person's ear occasionally also works.
But I guess it has to be a self-realisation, doesn't it? I mean, that's why I wasn't joking when I said leave. That if you have realised, it takes a lot of, I don't want to say balls, a lot of courage to say that, because it's not really encouraged by our society to have that power and then just give it away. But sometimes it's what you have to do. If you realise you are strangling the project, then have that self-reflection to actually say, okay, I'm killing this. Or if you are lucky enough to have your group realise that and help you to realise that, I think it's really the only way that you solve that.
But I think what I said is kind of from the other direction, because you're, you know, obviously there are situations like your project, your group, where the person who is not controlling, but the person who is kind of leading the project knows that and they've got that self-awareness in order to step out. But what I was saying was where that person, their ego is so big that they don't realise what they're doing, and they are manipulating the entire group, and a lot of people actually leave that group and stop being transition people because they don't want to be associated with that group, which is exactly what's happening. And it's, you know, there's all the funding is tied up in it, and all the money and the ego and the whole kind of, you know, it's very messy.
Yes, so I would actually prefer not to leave, to leave the project, because it's a project that I really like to and I would like to participate. I would prefer to get some tools, which I know there are, to delegate, to learn how to delegate. That's, I think it's a major tool for anyone that's interested in leadership. So I'll expect to hear about it.
I'm often trying to work out how to support, we're often saying, supporting people who aren't speaking out, who aren't being the leaders. It was also how do we look after the people who are the leaders, and now sort of realising, okay, I've been a leader, I'm in that situation, things are changing, what's my role now? And, you know, I'm interested to know, how do we support each other? Not only the people who aren't speaking, but they're not leading, the people who are leading, supporting both. And, you know, the group I'm in, we're kind of struggling to deal with that and how to help everybody. And also with people who aren't leading, trying to help them and support them to to become involved and to take that step, but without push, because some people don't want to be pushed. It's a real difficult balance between the two. You know, to say, well, would you like to just talk in this? Would you like to, you know, have something to say? And they're like, no, please say something. But I'm kind of at a loss as to how to help those people.
I've got two dynamics to sort of, or dimensions to add to that. One is something we've tried, and one is something else I realise is a problem within our group, is the kind of evolution of the leadership and the acceptance that occasionally you will no longer need to be a leader, and in fact your position and time has moved on, and you've got to allow other people to come in and take the power that you may have held or move on with something. And I think people find it hard to let go where they once held position, once held power, especially when it's not an elected position. And in our group, we've known that, but there's a few of the elders, I would say, quite wise in that, and they are still there on the leadership meetings, but they take a step backwards. They sit back, they do the notes or something like that, so they keep an eye on the movement, but without obviously always participating. And something, the other side of it is what we tried in our last large meeting is we wanted to redefine our core group. And so we were asked by the facilitator to stand up in and position ourselves along a timeline. So how much time you could give to transition. Those who could give 10 hours a week stepped at one end, and those who could give attendance at an event once or twice a year all the way to the other end. And we then found that there was 6-7 people who sort of congregated at the, we've got a bit more time or would like to be involved in the core at one end, and that redefined who was in the core. And then we had people who said they'd just like to be involved in work groups. They were sort of around, you know, every week, every couple of weeks they would meet up. And then you had quite a large amount of people who within our mailing list said, actually, we just want to be told about events and we'll be the ones supporting and going along. Because you found the people at the other end who wanted to give more time couldn't necessarily go along to all these events because they were the ones potentially running projects which would coincide with the other events and things like that. And we found that a useful exercise to reposition or rebalance the core group. It's in fact how I found myself in the core group because I realised I had a lot of time on my hands in the last few months and in the foreseeable few months. And so I said, I can give more. So utilise me. I've got a lot of skills which you don't know about, and you won't know about them unless I get myself involved. And they welcomed me in straight away, and a few other new faces, and we suddenly got revitalised, and we're now money. You know, we're now officially money as a transition network.
Do you find that the people who wouldn't necessarily step in with that process that you did you find the people who wouldn't necessarily speak or input then did, because they're coming from their own personal, actually this is what I want to do, this is how much time I've got? Or did you still feel that those people sort of, well,
we found, I'd have to say it wasn't 100% successful in that sense. We found that those who couldn't give that much time found themselves in a position of working groups. They started talking about that, so we then broke off and went into talk about with the people in your time frame what you'd like to do and how you'd like to be and how you'd like to be a part. And some of them people became quite vocal in work groups. They had ideas, they just hadn't had a chance to say it. And as soon as we broke away into smaller groups, that they suddenly started talking where they weren't before. But we've already done a lot of engagement sort of exercises beforehand to get a bit more vocal. Because like this, in a big room, some of us are quite scared to come in and talk. And then after a while we get more confident, and it was quite an end stage event that we did that, because at the end of the meeting we wanted to discuss core group things, and that's literally where we led on after that small exercise.
It's probably important to have some training in our groups for leadership, to build the capacity of leadership in our groups and potentially even followership. And I think it's interesting that a lot of people feel very uncomfortable with the term leadership. You know, that hero model of leader that we're conditioned with, the top of the hierarchy. And
what I've been interested in our work in Ireland is looking at distributed leadership, so that we have structures for taking leadership when it's needed, or distributing leadership across the community or across the organisation, rather than having a leader or a leading group. So I think there's something in that.
I was interested that I had quite a reaction to what you're saying here. I thought, ooh, I don't like that. It's a result of being the peace movement, and people who volunteer for posts aren't always the best people to take them. And I think the fact that I would want to have more process about who takes the leadership role is quite interesting, because some people are very open about it and I'm not very open about it. And our core group is made up of people who come from the working groups, more or less. So they've already had to have some goings on in those groups. And then they bring something. But it doesn't always work like that. So I just thought that was interesting that I felt like that. I don't know if other people do. And maybe I'm too reserved, and maybe this is a good way to bring more people in. But I also wanted to reflect on what I saw my colleague in Inner Transition do, which was very... I really admired her. She and I planned several meetings with input or films or something like that. And she spotted people who were keen in the audience, and she said, I need some help thinking about this. And she invited them all to bring and share in somebody's house. And we talked about ideas for the group. And when people were saying, well, perhaps we could do this. And she said, that's a really good idea. Do you think you could do that? I said, oh, I can do it on my own. Well, who could help them? And people in ones and twos. And then next, they're leading meetings. It's a vibrant group. They're pleased with themselves. They're full of ideas and stuff like that. And it seems to be something, but it's quite a thing to step back from doing all the things to enabling the group to happen and the networks to happen and encouraging people to take on roles. So I admired the way she did that.
It's interesting from coming from the US, but then also I'm sort of involved in a PTI, a pre-transition initiative. Being involved in, you know, really all the same principles, and now also being involved in the national network in the U.S. But figuring out the piece of leading with how you live, the modeling piece, and finding my voice, and figuring out that leadership, to a big part to me, is about helping other people find their voice, and getting past the fear of speaking and the self-judgment and all that, and, you know, moving through the burnout. How do I develop personal leadership practices so I don't burn out, so I can sustain year after year after year, and empower others to be able to hold roles and peel myself off. And so coming here, definitely feeling a little bit of the leadership as a dirty word, which I definitely see just in kind of in general in our movements, transition movement, sustainability movement. There's the a less than functional relationship with power and with money versus reinventing those things. And an interesting leadership edge that I'm experiencing, I think, is actually we think in terms of leadership, but then, you know, leading by managing, to effectively manage our personal resources, to effectively help manage our co-manage our teams to where other people don't burn out and we're in check enough with what we're doing and our direction and our goals and tracking how we're getting there so we could keep an eye on other people to not burn out. And hearing some stories about initiatives and sort of some of the relationship with measuring or not measuring, like we have a lot of issues and challenges with measuring, tracking things, which is sort of a management piece, and it gets into to effectively manage our personal resources, my personal resources, and then help better manage the organization. Then, you know, we build the skills, and I'm building the skills to figure out how to delegate more effectively and to have better systems in place and have a dashboard. And really just, it's helping me humbly figure out what I have to do to be able to empower other people and keep people on our team, take responsibility for the people around me and us that come into this culture to not burn out, because the unachievable scale of, you know, crises that are converging upon us.
I think that's key, though, building the capacity of other people in our group to take on roles, to be more comfortable with public speaking or leadership. And, you know, I think we forget about that a lot of the time, where we could be, as well as having structures that allow people to take leadership when it's needed, that we are aware that, you know, there is this nurturing of people's skills and awareness of where people are at. So
very important.
Could you say a little bit more about the distributed leadership that you've been doing in Ireland in your transition group? But can you say which group it is?
Well, it's transition. I'm from Claude Jordan. We're experimenting with Stafford Beer's viable systems model. So moving away from command and control so we can have more self-organisation, but then still realising that in certain areas of the organisation people need to lead, but that leadership is distributed throughout the organisation and there's good feedbacks and system supports for the people that are taking on those roles. And then those roles are interchangeable. So I might lead in education for a little while, but then can move to the same role somewhere else or a different role that I'm aware of because of my work in those groups. So I suppose it's maximising the autonomy, which then you get more out of people. You know, I think a lot of multinationals are taking this sort of on because if you're told what to do, you won't do it. But if you're given the autonomy to do something because that's where your expertise is, then you're going to be more productive, you're going to be more engaged. So it's allowing people to be autonomous and given autonomy where you can, so people take on the responsibilities and engagement of leadership and moving away from that command and control hierarchy, which I think we're all uncomfortable with. I think that's what we're uncomfortable with, is being told what to do. I want to be an autonomous being. I want to be an autonomous being in community. I don't want to be told what to do, but I want to engage and drive where I can drive.
Can I ask you how many people are exploring that model with you and putting it into practice?
We have 120 members and there's about 30 of us have been for the last 3 years with experts in this field, sort of really trying to develop it, understand the systems, but actually doing it, not just reading about it or thinking about it, doing it and putting in the systems that you know, all our organisation now is using this viable systems model, so the systems are there now and we're learning as we're doing it, so it's like more action research.
Did you say viable system?
Viable. Viable system. That'd be scary.
But I think you've touched on a really important point there, which is it's not just an ideological problem that we have with hierarchy, which maybe some of us have with hierarchy. It's that thing of engagement, isn't it? It's you don't go to a transition meeting to have somebody tell you, oh, you should do this job and do that job. We're volunteers, you know. You've got to engage us, and one of the best ways of engaging people is to actually encourage them, as you say, to nurture them into those positions of leadership, at least for some section or at least for some period of time. And get the ideas and get the initiative to flow from them, I guess.
Yeah, really important.
I stepped up because I felt my heart beating. And strange that the word Bible should come up, because I was sort of thinking, it's not a thought I've had before, but a model of leadership which I fully respect and don't have any problem with is a spiritual leader. If I think of the Dalai Lama on a big scale, or I think of Buddhist teachers that I know, I see them as leaders, but in a very benign way, the people that I know are leading really from a place of care and love, and actually they're teachers. They really have something that they've come to, and they wish to pass it on, and so they take up the role of a spiritual leader or a teacher.
They're embodying the teaching. They're not just telling people what to do. They're doing it.
Yeah. I think even leaders, for me, don't necessarily choose to be a leader or aspire to even be a leader. And many of the people that influence me are people who are just living a life because, as you say, they're thinking about it and they're embodying some values. And I can see that in their actions, and therefore they influence me, whether or not they know that they're influencing me. And that makes me realise that, if I live my values too, then I'm influencing. That makes me a leader, whether I like it or not.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think the spiritual engagement part, you know, waking up and learning to live well in place, is the purpose-centered and principle-centered form of leadership are just the most amazing potential. We're doing a lot of work with governments, and we're taking actions of scale, getting hundreds of people to take actions, and putting in dozens of grey water systems next weekend when I get home. And we're interacting in a way with government where we have the measurables, we present ourselves professionally, and we have competence, we have results, we have community support. But there's this piece we're in conversation with. They're struggling. They're getting their budgets ripped away. Every time I meet with a city engineer or mayor, they're in a whole new crisis. And to be able to show up with hope and solutions and inspiration and skills, and also to give them a little space and presence, even if the words never come up, there's a dynamic that occurs that is enabling us to pathfind some really amazing things with business schools, church, nonprofits. And I think it's the, whatever you call it, but the spiritual center component of it, of, you know, doing our best to wake up. And then having really good, you know, Stephen Covey's done amazing writing on principle-centered leadership and the Rockwood Leadership Institute. And there's just really great resources that people figured this stuff out in a way, and we could apply it to transition, you know, and go from personal resilience to solutions at scale.
Yeah. I think it's so important, the spiritual element or the self-development that can move beyond motivated by ego. Because if we're motivated by ego and then take a leadership role, we're then going to be commanding and controlling and telling people what to do. So there is an importance of that nurturing our own development, so that we are, when we're in leadership roles, that we're acting in integrity and not, you know, from that ego base.
And I guess a lot of the people that kind of are motivated by ego to take a leadership position aren't the kind of people that have enough self-doubt to kind of reflect a little bit and think, maybe my leadership style isn't perfect, maybe I am steamrolling people who might be useful actually to the movement.
I just wanted to share a definition that I heard of leadership recently, which was about, I don't know if I can get this right, but that a leader is an archetypal representative of the kind of consciousness of the group soul or group energy, and they're just the one that's able to, that steps up to speaking that. And in that way, they unlock the wider and deeper truth inside of all of the people, as opposed to being the one that's claiming, you know, like you're saying so clearly. And
ideally they are.
Yeah, it was just a beautiful definition, so I just wanted to kind of...
Neil Donald Walsh has a great definition of leaders. He says that a leader isn't the person with the most followers, but it's the person that creates the most leaders. So there is an empowerment sense to leadership, that we're actually leading from below and bringing everyone with us, rather than from above and, you know, leading everyone.
And I guess there's something back to what this lady was saying about that's great when it works well, and how do we do it when there's some really powerful, charismatic people crashing in on the space wanting to do it a different way, and that they're also members of our circle, also members of our community. And for me, one of the main leadership dilemmas we face is, how do we do that?
Right. Just in response to that, to my mind, if we can bring up the question in that kind of situation of what's the intention here? What's your intention in this bit of leadership? And ask that question of the people who may be behaving in that way. Because I think it's something we talk, motivation or intention, is something we should really look at in lots of ways in our lives. Why exactly am I doing this? And, you know, anyone who's thinking of leadership, if they think to themselves, now, why? What's the reason here? Am I doing this to get some glory from this movement? Am I doing it so that I can bolster myself? Or am I doing it from service? So I suppose in that sort of situation, if you see that kind of thing happening in a forum, you can bring it up of, let's look at our intentions here. And some people might not want to look at that. But
I mean, for me, that comes back to actually every single one of us needs to step up to being a leader. Because otherwise you have a situation where there's this clan or club called Transition, and you're either somebody coming in from the outside who's not a part of it, or you're on the inside. And actually, we all know that Transition isn't that. Transition is a circle that's owned by anybody and everybody who has something to offer. And so how do we do that thing with people coming in apparently from an outside to an inside who claim those things? Well, actually, every single one of us as a citizen of this world
needs to have the right, in a way, to stand up and say, whether we're the apparent leader, whether we're in the role of leadership in that group or not, or whether we're just sitting in the circle, to stand up and say, actually, you know what? In my experience right now, I'm having difficulty with that. Because I don't know about you, but I'm so much in a paradigm where somebody else does it for me, where somebody else takes responsibility for me. And because of my personality style, I don't want to be a leader very much, actually, at all. I'd much rather be in the back row, being quiet. It's much easier. Yeah.
But then we need good followership, not just good leadership.
Yeah.
It's almost as important as leadership.
Yeah. But I think sometimes those of us that are quiet in groups actually have the very thing that's needed to be said.
There was one thing I want to try and do within our transition group to rebalance the group. The exercise hasn't been fully developed, but the idea was it's almost like having a fixed exercise where they don't realise it's fixed, but they come in and do the exercise where you ask them, how much of a transitioner are you? How good are you? Because we've got some people in our group who think they're the best because they're doing everything or they're involved in certain groups. So they view themselves as someone better than somebody else who's doing just what they can. So I wanted to try and set up an exercise where everybody came in and there may have been a list of 40 things. You tick what you've done. And what they think it's going to be like is like one of them stress tests where you answer the questions and each one has scoring. And at the end of it, it tells you how stressed you are by how much you had all your points up. So I wanted to try and do it so at the end of it, basically it didn't matter what you scored. You turned up, that was one of the points. And the fact you turned up, it made you a transitioner in my mind. Mm-hmm. And it made you equal to anybody else in there who thought they were doing more. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter to me what you were doing. The fact you turned up and you already realised there was a problem and you need to try and work towards it. And basically it was then to bring it back to the group and try and get everybody to realise that they're all transitioners and they're all equal. I didn't care what level they thought they were, mm-hmm. but let's realise that the person next to them, if they've only managed to turn off their lights in their house a bit more often, then that was just as valuable in my mind, because that was their self-realisation, their first steps. And it's all about these little things that are going to eventually one day call to make a bigger thing. And I just, that was like an exercise I'm trying to think of how to take forward in our group to just rebalance it so people stop thinking themselves as better than somebody else because they're doing more. And it was also a way of bringing those shyer people who feel they're not doing enough to realising actually they're doing quite a lot just by having a list of lots of different things that you could be doing where they might think it's just part of their normal life and they don't actually realise it's fitting in with transition views. And that way, to try and pull more people from the group into the leadership roles, stepping up, realising that they've got something to offer. Mm. And that was just an idea I had for them. Mm.
So I'm just going to throw an invitation into the middle, that if anybody who's quiet feels any motivation for coming in here at all, I'm going to say, please.
Okay. Well, I just want to throw in a problem. I know several transition towns and the character of them are very much middle-aged, middle-class, white, most of them. And I think we need to break beyond those groups if we really want to change society. We want to have a lot of young people involved. This conference hasn't got a lot of young people, unfortunately, for instance. In our transition group, we haven't got a lot of young people. We haven't got a lot of working class people. We haven't got any ethnic minorities of any type. And leadership is about how you engage with all those groups who are outside the transition group and how you can get them involved too. So, proposals, please.
The danger of that, I think, I'm not giving an answer, I'm giving a different question, because that's in a way then having an agenda of wanting them to get involved in what we want, rather than them shaping the question and the or getting something in dialogue. And I think it is true that you go to a lot of transition events and it's people our age, but maybe people are doing it in a different way. And I went to a thing in Edinburgh recently, which I found details about at the last transition conference. It was a thing at Edinburgh University, and it was the younger people who had arranged it. And I was in a distinct minority of the person in the 50s, and they were doing absolutely masses. I think that sometimes it's maybe we're not having to work into us having groups doing it in the transition way as we see it, but acknowledging that people are doing things, you know, not trying to pull them on board into our thing, and maybe we need also to have conversations with other people to find out what their way is, and can we do something together?
I guess it comes back to we were kind of talking earlier about ownership and power as being perhaps quite negative or kind of maybe strangling things, rather than the alternative of kind of nurturing people to become leaders when it's appropriate, when they're the best person for that time period, for that project. And I think that is the point, is that we, in our transition meetings or our transition events, you know, we might only reach a certain demographic, but if there are people in other groups or in other demographics, if we can help them, if we can help them become leaders, facilitate them in becoming leaders, if that is a barrier, then maybe we can help do that. But we shouldn't necessarily try to lead it ourselves just so that we can get it under the transition name.
I have found with recent work in our group, we're sort of databasing what's already available in our area. And it was one of the questions I brought up at our last meeting, that we're not reaching a diverse group, we have no ethnic representation. And the same arguments were going back and forwards, is we don't need to go out and force the idea and try and make them have the same viewpoints, because they may already. But it's the fact that our networking, our communication strategy was not complete. It was missing the fact that there's already fantastic programs set up in our area, which we could be communicating through to try and pull more people into the movement that we've got. And so after realising this, we suddenly went, actually, there's also that network, and why haven't we thought of communicating through these before? And it's sometimes been because the leadership hasn't sort of allowed that growth, and is sort of just focused on what they wanted to do. And they haven't thought about everybody else as a population. But that's where we're now coming back to the realisation that we want to try and do it on a city-wide scale rather than our individual sort of localities, which is very much within their comfort zone. But the whole city-wide demographic is stretching some people outside of their comfort zone. And now we're having to rethink of how we're going to communicate to those areas which we don't live in. And that's been a positive thing from our recent meetings, that we're now looking into that. We have no answers, but we are looking into it.
I just want to make a timing intervention, just to say we've got about another 5 minutes, so we're kind of in the closing phase. So if there's any people that haven't spoken and want to put a last piece in, I'd really encourage you to come in shortly before the gong goes.
I just have one thing to throw in, which is working women's groups. There's often a great fear of the leadership and indeed of structure as well. And what I love about the group that I'm part of at the moment is that we see ourselves as a leader full group, and that's wonderful. Because we'll each take that role, as I was saying, but just moving seamlessly from one to the other as the need arises, and we each have our strengths and can work very well together. And I think more leaderful groups would be really advantageous. Thank you.
I guess I wanted to reflect a little on what makes a good leader. And I like this idea of leadership as service, as facilitation, as support. So kind of I guess just picking out when people have got good ideas and thinking, right, how can I support this person so they can do as much as they possibly can do, and yet I'm there to catch the things that they can't do so they feel safe and they can fulfil their potential as much as possible, and things will happen as much as we can make them happen. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but also I see that I need to... So something we do in Cambridge actually is we kind of don't really have leaders. We share, like, every role is shared, the facilitation, everything that we can share, we share. And yet, also I notice there are certain things that put you in a position of more power. So if you happen to be the person who checks an email account, or if you happen to... You know, there are certain roles that somehow or other give you more power just because they're the communications mm-hmm. centre or something like that. So it's... I think it's also about looking at which roles somehow carry that power and then devolving those as well, as much as possible.
I wanted to sit here briefly because this feels like a messy thing to say, but I wanted to say that I'm actually quite tired of listening to men more than listening to women, and that's not to silence anybody. Or to make the men feel like they can't talk, but I'm not talking about transition, I'm talking about my whole life in political organising. It's tedious, I'm really sick of it. And it's not, haven't got anything particularly constructive to say about it, but I just kind of thought I wanted to name it, and I just thought I'm probably not the only person in the room that feels that. And the other thing I wanted to add to that was just people have talked about enabling, allowing, facilitating leadership, encouraging leadership, how you do it. I think the other thing is just, and this is as much about class as it is about leadership, it's about the way in which middle-class people often take on leadership or just automatically feel a sense of entitlement sometimes. And again, that's not always the case. But what I would say is don't be afraid of actually having a bit of a vacuum sometimes. Don't be afraid of a bit of silence. Don't feel like you've got to rush in and take charge. There may be quieter people, there may be less kind of assertive people, there may be less practiced people, there might be messier people who can do stuff, but they don't have to do it straight away. And if you carry on talking and you carry on doing, you'll carry on getting what you've always got. And if that's a bit of a patriarchy or a bit of kind of a white middle class enclave running your organisation, then that's what you'll carry on having.
From your experience, do you think it's a question of men stepping back a little bit or women stepping forward?
It's definitely both. No, this is as much obviously about women stepping forward, but I can't make women step forward. But what I would encourage is for men sometimes to step a little bit back.
Leave a bit more space.
Leave a bit more space is all. Sometimes that's what it takes.
Which is kind of like what this is like. It's really great that there's an open seat here because it means there's always a space, which is a very skillful format, actually.
Yeah, I think that's a good illustration of it, I think, yeah.
One thing that occurs to me is that not just men stepping back or women stepping back, as is the case in where I live, but also white people stepping back to let other people get in. Because before we were talking about that it's a very white middle class occupation transition, and let's face it, it is. But I think the way that I see it is that people are comfortable in a familiar environment. And I think one of the reasons why it's such a white middle-class occupation is because there are so many white middle-class people who do transition, and that if there was that space to allow other people in and there was more people from different backgrounds and different nationalities and different colours of skin and what have you, then more people would come because people are attracted to what they know, to what's familiar.
I agree with you, but I think the difficulty is that most of us are very unaware of our own culture. So we're very unaware of how we set the tone of a conversation or how our own cultural references influence how other people might find our company. So we kind of think we're making a great effort and we're being neutral and all the rest of it. But I just think our very being often means the first two people that turn up at the transition initiative will often set the tone of that transition initiative. So I think, I'm not saying that shouldn't be tried, but I'm just saying it's very strong, that culture that we carry around with us, our own references, our own interests and all that. Language
I think on that note, if I may, the transition materials, stuff, conversations, everything needs to be translated into lots and lots of different languages. I used to live outside the UK, and at least 50% of the people where I lived hadn't, in Spain, hadn't a clue what was going on, because all of the transition material is available only in English. So we need to do lots of translation of lots of different stuff, not just for the people who live outside the UK, but also for the people who don't necessarily speak English very well who live in the UK. So I think that's a big project.
I'd invite you to just, you might want to go back to your seats and just take a moment with, maybe close your eyes, just let all of these words settle inside you. You might want to just check that you're still breathing. Just let those, all of those ideas and different people, different ideas just flow through you, land, whatever you need to take with you. Going to land. And just take a deep breath together. And as you open your eyes again, just make eye contact with one or two people. See if they're the same people that you were in the room with at the start. They look familiar or a little bit different. Great, and you might need to just stretch. We're just going to do a last little hearing from people about the process before we all go off to our next activity. So I'd really especially invite people who haven't spoken, maybe just to say how it's been to be listening to this. But if there's anything else that you want to reflect about this as a process, it's great just to hear a few comments before we all close the space and go off and do our next thing.
I was just thinking about styles of leadership. Like, I was a loner, like, most of my adult life. Project-wise, like, work projects. I used to be a travel writer, and I did it for quite some time, and happily so. And when I started, you know, when I embraced transition, I was forced to, I initiated my initiative, and I was right at the beginning when we started getting initiatives together in Portugal. It's a very unusual position for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering about the styles of leadership, because like, I always felt that the only way I could do it was by example, because I'm not that good with words.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to hear a little about that, if possible.
Okay, so now we're going to try and open up the fishbowl again and carry on the discussion, which is a sign, isn't it, of how interesting the topic is. So I really encourage you, if you want to do that, to carry on the discussion in the spaces, isn't it? Because if you ask that question of this group, you're going to keep us here. And we all want to go and play football, really, now. So, thank you. And any reflections, particularly on this structure and the process, rather than the content, or to, you know, do keep the conversation going. So, yeah.
Yeah, I realised I hadn't done the fishbowl before, and I found it really fascinating in the affirmation that we really are kind of one mind or something, or one consciousness. I don't know, because it's like I would be thinking of something as the process was going on to respond, and sort of sitting with it for a moment, but just thinking I'm just about to go there, and somebody would say what I was thinking. So it kind of gets there in the end, and that teaches me something about leadership, in which I try and practice to, that actually everybody will get there in the end. So you don't have to keep filling the spaces, you know.
Thank you. Anyone else particularly who hasn't spoken? And partly I'm interested in hearing how it is to witness, you know, like Rebecca's kind of filling in. So I see your hands, and I really want to make that space for people that we haven't heard from.
Yes, I see leadership is effective management. Also, you have to be flexible and understanding and listening.
Mm.
and you could either add it by experience, which is there are so many models. For example, there is EYE, which is expert by experience, and you build up your experience, or sometimes you built in it. You born in it either through family, culture, or structure. And this is how you become effective. Also, you learn from success, and you do your review, and from mistake. They both have advantage. So it will put the process forward. And each halfway through, you do some SWOT analysis, for example, this strength, weakness, opportunity.
Yes. Thank you, isn't it? We're opening the discussion again about what leadership is, and the invitation that I'm really trying to make is about this as a process. How was it to do a fishbowl? How was it to sit and be with this? So it's more really how are you feeling right now, or what's with you right now as we close this? Does it feel satisfying? Is it opened up lots of questions? You know, so it's these, it's more kind of the process comments that I'm really inviting. And I'm loving every bit of what people are saying about leadership, because I think it's all fantastic. So thank you.
I'm not sure, actually. To me, it's a lot of talk, and I'm not sure how affected I am, or how much I've learned, or how much my mind has changed about leadership. Certainly, there are many interesting things that are said, and it's great to see this process work. But just in terms of other workshops that I've been to today, and coming to this with a certain expectation of really getting, having my mind changed about certain things. Just wondering if there other ways that were less textual and less talk and less opinion, or, you know, demonstration, visual demonstration or psychodrama or other kinds of things that would have been more effective.
Thank you. Great.
I found it particularly useful for the crispness of comments and the variety, as opposed to having or being talked to from one or two. It's beautiful to see the flow, and I would encourage even more flow. I found it useful.
Thank you. Just going to take one or two more.
I found it useful. I came here wanting to hear about different roles for leadership. I'm aware, I think I might have said this is the first conference where you've done this as opposed to open space. In my questions that I was bringing to it, I also had questions which related to leadership and some of the other topics that are going on right now. And so I think if this had been in the open space sessions, I would have sat in on this question, and I might have ducked over to some of the others, because for me some of them fed in. So for example, doing and not doing, you've got some leaders who just want to, apparent leaders who just want to run with it, others who want to go up. So it helped, it was useful, but I also see the value of being able to touch into other conversations, which I'll now have to look for them.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you.
And Gerd, and then Mark. So in my experience, a fishbowl is a really like a closed process, and something happens and some realization happens on many different levels, and after it's done, it's done. And nothing which was said today, I think, was really very so private that it should be put in the open, but this thing there, for me, constantly looks like a leaking bucket, like the hole in the fishbowl, the microphone, because it extends what happens here out of this time and this place. And somehow this doesn't feel completely right to me.
Starting from, if there's a group of people, it'd be nice for you to sort of start, break, think about it, and then you all come back and say, like, out of that discussion, let's pick three things that were core that came up, and then we all start the next sort of thing. And it was obvious when people come in, actually, I want to talk more, that I think it works out. But now, sort of going, I feel kind of there's more that needs to be done after. So a good concept, but perhaps something you do at the beginning of a session.
Okay. I'm going to close it there. I know there's more, and do come and feed anything back to me that we haven't had a chance on. I just want to check, because we said we would check about the recording, and thanks for bringing it out. Does anybody feel not okay with this recording being made public? And if you don't feel, you know, it's fine also to come and say that to me after we're moving, if that's the case. Anybody want to say anything about that just before we finish? Okay, so unless I hear from somebody that doesn't feel all right, you can come and say it privately, then we'll assume that it is. So thank you all for taking part in this experiment.